Taking this gospel story as it appears in both Mark and Matthew, it gives us a full account of Jesus leading his disciples into this region of Caesarea Philippi. So to get a better understanding of this gospel, we need to look at the dialogue and the location of this story. For Jesus takes his followers on this 25-mile hike from the Sea of Galilee to just outside Caesarea Philippi, to the base of this 300-foot rock terrace upon which stands a temple to the Roman Emperor Augustus. And into the side of the rock face are carved out niches with statues and idols placed to honor various pagan gods. So using this background of false gods, it's then that Jesus asks his disciples, "Who do you say that I am?" And as we heard, it's Peter who replies, "You are the Messiah, the Christ." To which Jesus replies, "You are Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church. I'll give you the keys to the kingdom of heaven." Jesus goes on to tell him that he will suffer greatly and be killed and raised on the third day, all of which brings an immediate response of denial by Peter that no such thing should ever happen. And Jesus rebukes Peter, saying, "Get behind me, Satan. You're an obstacle to me." So how did Peter get it so right that Jesus uses Peter as the foundation of his church? And literally minutes later, Peter gets it so wrong that he's called Satan. Well, the answer and today's lesson is rooted in the source of Peter's comments. See, first we hear that Peter calls Jesus the Messiah, to which Jesus says that answer didn't come from flesh and blood, meaning it was not something that could have been derived from human thought, but was revealed to Peter through the Heavenly Father. Now, on the reverse, when he protested about Jesus having to suffer and die, Jesus told Peter that he was not thinking as God does, but as humans do, and of the necessity to take up our cross and follow him. So why the big swing with Peter? First, we find him comfortable with grace and glory and filled with heavenly insight. And then the next moment, faced with the suffering and death of his friend, his human thoughts have the rock of Peter being called out as a stumbling stone by Christ. Part of Peter's challenge was his own personal expectation that the Messiah would go to battle and defeat the multitude of armies and would reign on high as king wearing a crown of gold. But when Christ explains that as the Messiah, he will suffer greatly and die as a king wearing a crown of thorns, it shatters what Peter and others have expected. And filled with fear, Peter's response comes from his human emotions and thoughts. Can you imagine how much Peter's head had to be spinning? I mean, one moment life is great. He's getting the keys to heaven. He has the Messiah on his side. And then when things point to a direction that he doesn't want, he's remanded to get behind Christ, to take up the cross, to follow. So by looking at this full story spread over Mark and Matthew, we're given the two different voices that can influence our spirit. There's God's voice, what some call the inner voice, that feeling of sudden knowing, kairos time, which leads us to a knowledge that has us acting with unconditional love toward ourselves and others. Then we have that mental head voice, the home of our ego, which is not necessarily governed by love and often influences our spirit to be unloving by encouraging us to dismiss that competing inner voice that we each have. Perhaps the easiest way to discern the difference between the two voices is how we each react to a situation in our lives. For when we find ourselves defending our truth and our world and deciding who's acceptable and who's not. We're thinking as humans do, with our mental voice. Often this type of thought pattern is fear-based. And probably more so than ever with the continuation of COVID, Afghanistan, the recent natural disasters of fire and wind and rain, and all in the shadow of this 20th anniversary of 9/11. Many are feeling that we're living in some of the most fearful times of our lives. Fear. It's the opposite of love and forces our head thinking to take over, just as we heard in today's gospel. It becomes a stumbling block to the road that leads ahead of us. But when we find ourselves in a situation where we lead with love and care and honesty for others, where we're no longer pushing others away from us to where we feel they belong, when we take the time to, using the words that we heard today, to deny oneself, which really just means giving less priority to oneself, and we recognize everyone as a child of God, where we love by loving and heal by healing and forgive by forgiving, then we're listening to that internal voice of God. For this type of knowledge can only come from the Creator. Franciscan Richard Rohr, I think, sums it up best when he wrote, "If you can trust and listen to your inner divine image, your whole-making instinct, or your true self, you will act from your best, largest, kindest, most inclusive self. If any thought feels too harsh, shaming, or diminishing of yourself or others, it's not likely the voice of God, but your ego. If something comes toward you with grace and can pass through you and towards others with grace, you can trust it as the voice of God. For we must listen to what is supporting us. We must listen to what is encouraging us. We must listen to what is urging us. We must listen to what is alive in us." So I invite you to listen to this story I recently came across. It's an example of a woman who listened to her inner voice and made a difference in another's life. Wandering around the Albuquerque airport terminal, after learning my flight had been delayed for 4 hours, I heard an announcement say, "If anyone in the vicinity of gate A4 understands any Arabic, please come to the gate immediately." Well, gate A4 happened to be my gate, so off I went. There, an older woman in full traditional Palestine dress, just like my grandma wore, was crumpled to the floor, wailing. "Help," said the flight attendant. "Talk to her. What's her problem? We told her the flight was going to be late, and she did this." I stooped to put my arm around the woman and spoke haltingly in my best Arabic. The minute she heard a few words she recognized, she stopped crying. She thought the flight had been canceled entirely and she needed to be in El Paso for a medical treatment the next day. I said, "No, we're fine. You'll get there, just later. Who's picking you up? Let's call him." So we called her son. Speaking to him in English, I told him I would stay with his mother until we got on the plane. I would ride next to her. She talked to him. And then we called her other sons, just for the fun of it. Then we called my dad, and they spoke for a while in Arabic and found out they had 10 shared friends. Hours went by, and by now she was laughing a lot and telling us of her life. Then she pulled from her bag a sack of homemade mamul cookies, little powdered sugar crumbly mounds stuffed with dates and nuts, was offering them all to the women at the gate. My amazement, not a single woman declined one. It was like a sacrament. The traveler from Argentina, the mom from California, the lovely woman from Laredo, we were all covered with the same powdered sugar and smiling. There's no better cookie. And then the airline broke out free apple juice, and two little girls from our flight ran around serving it, and they too became covered in powdered sugar. I noticed my new best friend had a potted plant poking out of her bag, some medicinal thing with green furry leaves. Such an old country tradition. Always carry a plant. Always stay rooted to somewhere. As I looked around that gate of late and weary ones, I thought, this is the world I want to live in. The shared world, the loving world, the caring world. For once, the crying of confusion stopped and people listened. Not a single person at the gate was apprehensive or fearful about any person around them. So I invite us to take some time this week to examine where our thoughts are coming from when we're faced with different situations. Is it coming from our inner loving voice that represents God's help and guidance in our life? Or is it our mental voice which competes with God's voice and will routinely influence our spirit to speak and act in an unloving way? For how we listen, how we react, how we reach out is not a choice we get to make on our own. For we are all connected to a natural guidance where we just have to be willing to give up sole control of our life, to carry our crosses, and to surrender ourselves to that inner voice of God's abundant love.